Let me tell you how much I love the Red Rooster subscription service. I've been getting the saddle glove every month, the all black one, just because, you know, it's your boy. And it goes with everything, right? I just had an epiphany. If I go into my user settings on redroostergolf.com, I can change which glove I get every month. So you know what I did? I switched over to the Boilermaker. It's white. It's got that gold. It's got that black. It's also extremely versatile. It can go with any fit that I throw it on. So I can switch. One month, I get the saddle. Next month, maybe I get the Boilermaker. The next month, maybe I get the Comet. I switch it up. You have options. That's what I'm trying to tell y'all. And I'm happy about that. So if you're trying to mix your styles, you're trying to match your glove with your fit, you're trying to, you know, get something off, check us out at Red Rooster. And when you go to redroostergolf.com and use code GGT20, you can take 20% off your order. Tell them the shrink sent you. And also tell them Connor said cockle doodle doo.
There's another side to good health, and that's good mental health.
Riverside app didn't shit the bed on you, because sometimes it can drive us a little nuts.
You know, when I already had it on my iPad, because I'm just such a pro like that.
I mean, these days, you're running and gunning, doing interviews all over the place, so.
I've been running and gunning a little bit. How do I sound? Is it, the AirPods okay? I'm in the Marriott lobby here at Sawgrass, but I think it's okay.
Amazing. No, you're fine.
Honestly, the
live texture, it adds a nice little soundscape.
Should I wear my like inside the ropes credential and just look all official?
Yes.
this is an audio medium, Chad.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Where are you guys based, by the way?
I'm in New York City.
Cool.
And I'm in Los Angeles.
Ho. What's up, baby? Come on. Let's play some golf.
Go. Hey, hit me.
I'm in Studio City.
Oh man, I'm in mid city, so we can triangulate the map and find somewhere in between you and me.
Come out to my club Lakeside. We'll have a great time.
Say less. As many people as I know in this city that belong to clubs, you'd be shocked at how few invites I get. So I'm gonna be taking you up on that.
Dude, we'll have. I mean, look, I'm a big fan of what you guys do on social media, and I'm like, if you guys are anything like your vibe on social media, you're gonna fucking love Lakeside, because it is the chillest, best hang. It's one of the best hangs in golf. It's gonna be a great time. We'll have fun.
So I've heard.
All right, let's kick it.
Yeah. So I mean, we have reason to celebrate. Today, yesterday, it was announced that season 2 of Full Swing is coming back to Netflix. So
yes.
Yep.
Go off.
Congratulations.
Here are your flowers. Congrats.
Thank you. It's exciting. It was very fast, which is great. I've made a bunch of shows for Netflix before. I think this is the fastest they've ever renewed one of our series. Just shows the huge success of how much people fall in love with watching the show, and not just like golf nerds. You know, it's like it's really seems to be hitting a bunch of different audiences. I was joking that like the show is kind of was a long con of like 10 years to convince my wife that golf was cool. So I'm just trying to do a service, you know, in that front, but. I keep getting sent pictures from random friends of like being on flights, taking photos of people watching the show on their flights, you know, and just like on their phones. And it's great. I couldn't have asked for a better reception. We're super proud of the series, but you know, I'm so glad that people are watching it, having a lot of fun. I certainly had a lot of fun making it.
We had a really good time watching it. And, you know, as you're probably familiar, our project charter at Group Golf Therapy is to explore the intersection of where golf and mental health meet, right? Where those two worlds collide. And I think Full Swing has provided some incredible source material for how players in professional golf deal with mental health. Maybe not in as like concrete terms as that, but you see some really incredible journeys being taken by these players that you've profiled throughout a particularly tumultuous season in professional golf. So I guess, what's your relationship with that, and what did you notice throughout making the documentary about the mental side of the game in particular?
You know, I think it's omnipresent in every episode, just how lonely golf can be. And being a professional athlete is such a grind. And, you know, it takes an immense amount of talent, but also just like a will. And I think that it was very clear from the first moment we sat down with, you know, these players that like they all had that drive that it takes to be, you know, a professional at this level. They all have so much talent, but they all have this like intense will to win and will to push themselves forward. but they also deal with the stress of it in all completely different ways. You know, there's like people like Joel who really lean on their friendship with their, you know, with Gino and their sort of support system, and they keep themselves really grounded as kind of this way to be able to accept that they're this elite athlete, but also, you know, understand who they are off the golf course. And then you have kind of on the other end of it, you know, somebody like Brooks Koepka, who I think, you know, that's one of my favorite episodes. I think it's just so powerful.
Ours too.
To see someone who's, you know, been at the very top of the sport, you know, legendary, like Hall of Fame level player, who perhaps that happened too quick in some sense, maybe for him. It all happened all at once. And then now he's like golf royalty, and he, you know, he's had injuries. And so he's just, it's not the same. And the margins are so thin in golf, like from being elite to, you know, missing cuts. And it could be so intangible about how hard it is to get it back. And I was so grateful that Brooks was so willing to be so authentic and open with us. And he was the player that surprised me the most. You know, when we first signed him in the series, he was one of the first interviews that we did. And I flew to the Bahamas for Tiger's tournament at the end of 2021. And we start with audio interviews. So, you know, just like this, no cameras, we just talk. And we were at this cool music studio right next to the golf course. And he came over, and every other player who had, we were doing like six interviews that day, we were running people through. And every other player who came in had like this entourage. They had an agent, they had their friend. It was something, there's someone looking over their shoulder. It's like everyone except for Brooks. He came by himself, no agent, no entourage, walked in, sat in a chair, and then just started going from jump, like opening up about how he wasn't sure if he was going to get it back and what that looked like. And
wow.
Talking about how, you know, people think he doesn't care. People don't think he even likes golf. And he was describing, you know, laying in bed with Jenna, who's his fiance at the time, now they're married, and just like waking up at 2 a.m, not being able to sleep, and like gripping an imaginary club, you know, in bed, just thinking about if I make my grip a little stronger, maybe I'm doing the fingers, you know. It's just, he'd go to bed thinking about it, he'd wake up thinking about it, and as you could tell, it's torturous and fleeting. And I think it was just a powerful portrait of an elite athlete and them, you know, trying to come to grips with, you know, a sport that you can play forever, but, you know, can you win at that level? It's just, right. It was fascinating.
Yeah, man, the Brooks profile struck us particularly because we talked about how much it seems to profile this one person, but it actually investigates masculinity in a much larger sense, and combativeness and competition. And exactly like you were saying, this guy who's sort of Icarus onto the golf scene, and now he's grappling with the fate of his body and his mind and all these things. Really, really interesting. I think also what's interesting is we've had this experience before where, you know, you have these preconceived notions of what a professional athlete or a celebrity or whoever it is, some person of notoriety is going to be like. You have these impressions of who you think these people are going to be. And then when you meet them in person, sometimes they prove you wrong and you become endeared to them in a way that you'd never thought possible before. And I'm wondering if there were any characters that were profiled on the show that you had that type of reaction with. It sounds like Brooks maybe is one of them.
Definitely Brooks. Perfect example. Just the opposite of what I expected. So much introspection, so much thought, such a smart athlete mind, you know, and it's so clear that what willed him to the place that he got was his ability to put a chip on his shoulder and to make himself feel like an underdog. And, you know, it's famous, like Michael Jordan, you know, that's his story as well. And like Brooks needs that to drive him. And he said that as much. And, you know, and he blew me away. You know, it was really, everybody was sort of like that. You know, I think there's a great quote that like the smaller the ball, the better the sports writing. And I think like, there's something about golf that's there's something of its essence that it's such a lonely game. It's something that you're on an island by yourself. You may have your caddy there, but it's just you're executing, and you know, and the margins are so thin and everyone's so talented that like, it's just, can you will it to happen? You know, can you trust in the process? Can you trust in yourself? And then how do you kind of get that extra 5% that makes a champion? And I think you saw that with Matt Fitzpatrick, where, you know, he's a very different approach than like JT or Jordan Spieth or even like Tony Finau. Like he knows that he's not as physically gifted in terms of his size and stature, And so he decided that the way for him to be competitive at the highest level was he was going to have to add some distance, and he was going to not, but also not sacrifice anything else. And he took a very analytical approach to that. And as you saw in the series, he tracks every shot he's hit since it was like 14. And it's not a joke. I mean, he literally showed us all the books written down, every range shot he's had. I mean, imagine how many thousands and millions of balls he's hit. He's written exactly, you know, what the strike was, where it landed, the distance of travel, everything. And he uses that to build out these spreadsheets to basically know, is he getting better? And he knew it was never going to be like a big leap. It was going to be tiny incremental leaps, and that he was going to be ready for the moment. And so much of golf is about sort of waiting for your moment and being able to deliver when it comes, because sometimes you're going to get a bad draw. You're going to get a bad weather draw. You know, you're going to get bad bounces. There's the golf gods are cruel sometimes. It's just about capitalizing on the moment when you're in it and being able to take it to the next level. And that, you know, we were with him when he got really close at the PGA Championship and followed along with him as he drove away from that golf course, you know, sort of feeling like he had a chance to win and maybe missing it away a little bit. Mm. And then to come back a month later and to see him sort of re-motivate himself, 2 days later, he's back in the gym, he's back working. I mean, he never skipped a beat, and he just kept pushing himself to get a little bit better. And I promise you that the player that he was at the PGA Championship, he was 1.5% better at the US Open. And that was the reason why he won, you know? Yeah. And that's what I love about Matt, is thinks about it that way. And he's able to kind of put it behind him. JT is another player at a kind of very similar but different approach, in that like JT has all the physical talent in the world. You know, he doesn't have to think about his golf swing in the same way that, you know, some of these other players do. It's very natural for him. And for him, it's about waiting. It was fascinating to me because I'm like, how do you win a golf tournament? It's your approach to winning a golf tournament. He's like, I just have to wait, because I know I'm good enough that I'm going to get hot at some point over 4 days, and I'm going to make a bunch of birdies. And if I get hot for 4 holes, or I'll get hot for 10 holes. And if I get hot for like 12, I'm probably going to win.
Must be nice.
And so for me, it's just about waiting around for me to get hot. And all of a sudden I feel it click. And then I can sort of push the pedal down and start firing at flags.
Right.
And so for him to have the patience, like that's why he's so perfect for a playoff. Like he's been hot, the chasing down the leaders, you know, he knew he was hot. And once that playoff happened, there was no way he wasn't going to win, because he had like the pedal was down and he had the confidence, and it was like in the middle of his hot streak, and he had been waiting for that hot streak all week, you know, and there it was right at the moment when it mattered. And, you know, they all had different stories, you know, and one of the things that's so cool and satisfying about making a show like this is you just, anytime you open the curtain, I think you alluded to this earlier, anytime you open the curtain on anything, it's just never what you expect on the other side. You know, the people, the lifestyle, the world, you know, these guys are all human beings. I found them to be extremely relatable, even though they're flying around in private jets. Like they're 25 or 30 year old guys. They've got friendships, they've got families, you know, there's so much sort of pressure on them to perform every single week. And they all have a different variation of sort of that X factor that lets them sort of do what they do. And they also just like pretty much all love golf. You know, you'd think you get sick of it. These guys are obsessed. They play golf on their off days. You know, they do approach it as a job for them, but also it's a lot of, they love it, you know, and they still get just as excited about a great shot, you know, in a practice round as they do, like as we would, you know, as you and I.
Yeah.
And then to be able to go do it in front of a crowd with, you know, all the pressure of a major championship is just, it's spectacular to watch.
These guys love golf. Going back to the Brooks thing, you alluded to the narrative around him, like not giving a shit, not caring, not practicing, one that he fed into as well through a majority of his career. But then in this documentary, he said verbatim, I was the best player in the world from 2017 to 2019 because I worked harder than everybody else.
Yeah,
gets a little questionable about like which one of those stories is accurate, right? And he clearly put up this wall of this thing doesn't affect me. And then you relay the story about him in bed thinking about his grip, right? Like one of those things is not like the other.
I think I could shine some light on that too, because in that first interview, it didn't actually make it into the show because we didn't have really time to talk about his first US Open win, but he did tell me a story that really I think illuminates like why he took on that persona of like not caring. So when he showed up at Erin Hills when he won his first US Open, you know, he was playing very well, but wasn't, you know, like ever a threat. It wasn't like he became the major monster that he did over those next kind of 2.5 years. But he said he was hitting balls, and his coach came up and told him, kind of pulled him aside and just like took him over the corner. And he's like, been watching you hit. Driver looks good. Iron looks good. Chipping looks good. Putting looks good. So why aren't you fucking winning? You know, and Brooks was like, what? And he thought he was going to be there to like give him a pep talk. And he was like, you're weak. You're too scared. Ooh. You know, you're not like, you're not ready. Everything's perfect. Your game is never, I've never seen anybody hitting the ball better than you're hitting it right now. So why aren't you winning more? You must be not ready for it. And he said he almost punched him. Like he got red. His fist clenched up. And he just looked at him in the eye and said, you're not ready to win. And Brooks was just like, oh, I'm going to prove it to you. And so he walks away madder than he's ever been and basically like took that attitude into that week and blitzed the field, as you remember. And he said he finished up and he got in, he wins, pulls out, finishes his final putt, goes into the bathroom. And he said he looks at himself in the mirror and he fist bumped himself so hard he almost broke the mirror. And he's like, you just fucking did that. And then he said, I remember thinking that was easy. And if it was this easy to win a major, no one's going to stop me.
Wow.
And so then he turns around and like, so he has this thing where he's like, I think he felt like everyone was afraid of him because, and they were, you know, he would walk out, swagger out there looking like a linebacker and just be fearless and turn it on. And I think he had an intimidation factor about him in a way that no one else has had since Tiger. I mean, obviously not at the Tiger level, but like more than anybody else where, you know, the physical intimidation with the sort of mental edge and his sort of coldness became a weapon for him. And people wouldn't like fold like the way they would to Tiger per se, but he thought they did, you know, in his head probably. Yeah. I mean, he didn't say that, but I don't want to put words in his mouth, but you could tell that that was his feeling, was like, this is easy. It's hard for everyone else. And that's what propelled him to those levels. And then all of a sudden you become golf royalty and Jack Nicklaus wants to talk to you and everybody's, and now you're expected to win everything. It flips that narrative in your own head of like, now everyone expects me to win. I want to be an underdog because I want to step on their throats. This is one of the lines he says. And I just think it's fascinating because like, can you sustain elite play with that level of motivation? Like, do you, you know, clearly like Michael Jordan was able to create beefs and chips his whole life. But Brooks, you know, I don't know. And the injury thing, I think you can't overstate like how important that is for him because his body just broke down on him, you know, and like it's hard to overcome that, especially at these like margins that are so tight.
I love how you put that about his physical presence is, I mean, it's notable. I think specific to his episode, I think most people talked probably about his relationship with his then fiance, but like second was like his body. They were like, damn, like I ain't know he had it like that. And it's clear it was shown, you know, he really works on himself. I'm interested as a filmmaker, you know, you in a way, on some level, you hold up a mirror to yourself. You might start out with an objective, but then one question, one answer, one aside leads you down this path for deepening, that's interesting. Let's pull on that thread. So I'm curious, what did you learn about yourself making this film? What did one of these players give you or say to you that was that thread that you needed to pull on to uncover, unpack, reckon with something in Chad?
That's a really good question. Nobody's asked me that question yet. So well done. I think the most meaningful moment to me was a conversation I had with Rory, which isn't in the show because we were talking sort of post around, and we talked about the sort of sacrifice of leadership. And I had asked him that question of sort of, what is it like to, you know, you're obviously an elite player, takes a lot of sacrifice to get to that level. But now you're become a leader, and there is a unique sacrifice to leadership. You know, it's sort of the old adage of being like, you're the first in the room, the first in the office, you know, you're the last one to leave. Like true leadership is about sacrifice. And he hadn't really thought about it that way. And that's something that I've thought about a lot. Like I sacrificed, you know, a lot of making the show in terms of my family life, you know, three young children. I've spent most of the year on the road. My wife's like carried the load in such an incredible way. She also has a career. So she did both and allowed me to go out and do this thing and make the show. So, you know, it's not just a internal sacrifice or a personal sacrifice, it's sort of a, you know, it's a family sacrifice to do something like this. But I thought Rory's note, you know, the notion that he understood that to be a leader, it takes sacrifice, that you can't do it all. You have to make your choice. And for him, you know, his moment that he's in now, stepping into this role as sort of a new kind of spokesperson for the sort of heart and soul of the game.
Yeah.
Is, you know, it demands tremendous sacrifice, because you, when you step out into a leadership position and everybody who used to be your peers are now sort of your, you know, you're not leading them, mm-hmm. that changes your relationships pretty quickly. And anybody who's been in a position of leadership, who's ever been sort of promoted from middle management to leadership, or, you know, anytime you become a manager of something, it changes your relationships. And that's a sacrifice. You can't, you know, you obviously maintain friendships, but you're not, it's different. So I thought that was fascinating to come from an athlete and someone who, you know, like a quarterback is the leader of a team. That's part of the job. Golfer, there's no team, you know? And so to have an individual sport athlete make the sacrifices of leadership, that, to me, just makes me even more impressed with Rory, because he didn't have to.
Yeah. So how did you, Chad, regulate through this process? I mean, 300 days of shooting, countless hours of pitching and research and cajoling and interviewing and all these things that goes into it. Meanwhile, you do have a family, like you said, and all that. How did you find peace and calm through this, what has to have been a tumultuous period of your life?
So I think it's, I love this project. This has mm-hmm. been my passion. You know, I also have a real job. I run a TV studio. We made like 12 other shows last year, you know, in addition to Full Swing. Then I had to oversee all those and work on all those. But this has been my passion project for 10 years. You know, I grew up playing golf as a kid competitively and, you know, and wanted to play on the PGA Tour when I was a junior. And, you know, and so I've always wanted to do something in golf. Golf's the kind of thing, like, even doesn't matter. Right now I'm thinking about golf, you know, like it'll be in a meeting of, you know, big important client pitch, something. I'm thinking about golf in the elevator on the way up. It just never gets out of my head, you know? So for me, I'm just passionate about it. And so it wasn't so much like tumultuous. It was obviously stressful because, like, you're just every single bit of access is sort of never guaranteed. You know, you've got to, you're constantly, every second of this show is a pitch. You're basically, hey, can we come along? You might even follow you, or can we put the cameras in the car? Are we going to, can we film with your dad? Hey, we need to film with your dad again. Like, every one of those things is an ask. There's always a chance of a no. But for me, I love what I do. You know, this was like the greatest experience of my life. It's so something I've been dying to make forever. And also, you never know if you're going to get a second chance. Like, so I was like, put it all, leave it all on the field here. I'm not going to like leave any stone unturned. We're going to make the best possible show we can make. Hopefully we get a chance to make more, which, you know, yesterday we announced season two, which is awesome. So we did, and it paid off. But, you know, it was never a burden. I love making this thing. This is like the payoff of like an entire career for me to be able to get the opportunity to do this. And as you could probably tell, like, I'm extremely passionate about golf and about this project. So for me, it was just like a chance to kind of finally do the thing that I've always wanted to do, and to make sure that it lived up to my own the sort of lofty goals for it. And then, you know, you surround yourself with really great people. So if you've got a great team around you, you can achieve awesome stuff. And you know, being able to delegate to some spectacularly talented filmmakers who shot, you know, the episodes, and our editing team, and our, you know, even our like archive producer, Tim, who literally like took 7,000 hours of archive and somehow assembled it in a way that the editors could work with it and use it. You know, it's just like you get inspired by all of the work that's happening, you know, inside the organization of a show. And a big television show like this is like a company. It's like the size of a company, you know, budget-wise and employee-wise. I mean, we had probably 35 people on our post-production team. Another, you know, there's probably close to 100 people who worked on this show, you know, and it's like running, it's like being the CEO of a company in some sense. And so, you know, every department has to be working well together. They have to be collaborating. You know, there's going to be friction, interpersonal friction, and you got to keep people aligned on the big vision, sort of what you're here to do. You know, and then it's also very satisfying because sort of unlike a company, you get to like ship a one product and everybody gets to see it and hopefully they love it. And that is very satisfying to kind of have that out in the world and be able to share that with a team who, you know, who sacrificed a lot. But, you know, that Tim was available like 24 hours a day, you know, because he'd be negotiating with someone in Australia for footage. He'd be, you know, they sent people to Chile to get stuff from Mito's family. I mean, it was it was just like the whole logistics of that, you know, some of that stuff I never even saw until after the fact and heard from him, you know, just the sheer dedication. And that'll motivate you too. When all of a sudden, you know, someone who's not the executive producer, who's not going to have the first name in the credits, you know, someone who's just killing themselves to make it because they believe in the project and they know it's going to be awesome. You know, all those sort of unsung heroes deserve so much credit for this as well, because they were the ones that did the work.
Amazing.
Before we get into our meat and potatoes, I mean, it's timely. Season 2 was just announced. To the extent that you are comfortable and legally able to, what can you give us to look forward to for season 2?
We are going to have a lot of great access this year. I think that the challenge for anything season 1 like this is that nobody has anything to compare it to. I mean, you can compare it to Drive to Survive, but, like, you know, it's a different thing. And these are pro athletes that are probably necessarily very well protected by their management teams and their agents' teams and the PGA Tour and everybody else. Like, they do a lot to protect these players. And they, you know, and for good reasons, they're all independent businesses, basically. Each guy's kind of the CEO of their own empire. Yeah. So to get them to trust me with something completely sight unseen, and they didn't get to see the show until it was done. They saw it like a couple weeks before it came out, but there was no notes. They didn't get a chance to review it. Their agents didn't get a chance to renew it or review it. It was all kind of like, you have to trust that you're going to be satisfied as much as we are. And, you know, but now they've seen it. So, and it's a hit. I mean, they were very relieved when they watched it, just that, like, it was cool. I think they were like, golf, you know, I think everybody has in some sense of, like, you know, it's golf. Like, it's not race cars. They're not crashing, you know, like, we're, you know, how are you going to make it look cool? And we, you know, we showed it to them and they were like, oh, right. That is dramatic. You know, that is interesting. And we told them also that, like, if it's important to them, it's going to be important to us. And that, like, we had to be there in their sort of lowest moments, because that would make the sort of highest point just feel that much more epic. And I told them, like, we're not the media. We're not going to be turning around tweeting this tomorrow.
Right.
Anything, even if we catch you in a low moment, that's going to have a year's worth of context and it's going to come out in 6 months. So whatever it was that was driving the news cycle that day, it's not going to be driving the news cycle. You're going to have all this context. You're going to be able to show people how you overcame that challenge and came back from that, like, crushing defeat. And so now that people have seen it, now the players understand kind of what it is. It doesn't hurt that it's like a big hit, kind of global hit. So, you know, we feel really good about, you know, being able to sort of take the access that we had last year and expand upon it. We've added a few new cast members that we're going to be announcing in the next couple of weeks that are really going to be exciting to people. We have a sort of big surprise coming that we haven't announced yet for season 2 as a way to kind of raise the stakes even higher. So, you know, I think it's like, it's going to be exciting. Obviously, you know, you still have to show up, put the cameras and the mics on people. And, you know, if they had a bad round, they're still going to be annoyed, even if they know it's going to be good for them probably to participate in it. So, you know, the fight doesn't ever end, but certainly we're going into it now with, you know, an even deeper level of trust, because the players have sort of seen it and they've seen the fans' reaction to it. I think that, you know, we'll be in rooms that, you know, we were in a lot of rooms that no one's ever been in last year. We'll be in even more this year.
Well, it sounds like, much like the murky PGA Tour wraparound season, you didn't have much time off either. So good on you for getting right back to work. I know you have to get out of here. We want to ask you a couple very quick hit meat and potatoes questions, the questions we ask every guest on the show. Number one.
Great.
What are some of your favorite golf smells?
Oh, man. I love the smell of, like, a iron. The metal smell of, like, a wedge or something. Like, and you only really get it if you're hitting out of the bunker that's, like, really dry. But there's, like, a specific smell, and there's a sound that you make when you hit a good bunker shot. That kind of sticks with me. Obviously, the smells of, like, the grass, you know, it's sort of a childhood smell of, like, freshly cut grass. But yeah, to me, like, that sort of metallic iron smell is very specific to golf. And then also the smell of mineral spirits, because I worked in golf store when I was growing up. My first ever job, I worked at a golf store as, like, a stock boy. And I used to buy, like, all the used clubs, basically, and, like, assemble this real, like, Frankenstein bag constantly. And, yes. and I would always regrip my own irons and stuff and drivers. And so just the smell of mineral spirits reminds me of regripping a club, which means that grip's going to be really fresh. And I always feel like I can swing better when it's a fresh grip. And, you know, grips when I was a kid, like, they're expensive. It's like $10 a grip to do your whole bag. That's $150. That's a lot of money. That's like a week's worth of work. So to do that right, kind of take the time with double-sided tape to pour the mineral spirits over, that smell is just like, it just means anticipation. It's like, I get to play golf soon with new grips. It's very exciting to me. So, yeah.
for what it's worth, that was Rory's answer. So something about leadership and synergy there that you guys have in common.
Yeah, probably the only thing in common.
You've also hit like just a few of our favorite love language words.
It's true.
And just to appreciate that. Yeah. Okay, last question. What is the time on the golf course that you have laughed the absolute hardest?
I mean, this is going to be like a name droppy story, which is kind of obnoxious coming from a sort of TV producer. But I was playing golf with a very famous athlete, Blake Griffin, out him on it. We were playing golf and we played 18 holes and had a great time. And one of the guys in our group, in the club that I play at, you can play as like eightsomes. It's like real, there's no tee times. It's real sort of chill. So we played as a fivesome and we finished up 18 and we were just having an amazing day and a lot of fun. Blake was sort of new to golf. He'd been playing for like a year and he's just sort of super talented and just this really outgoing, super fun guy. Just be around and like love playing golf with him. But one of the other guys in the group, we come up 17 and he's like, hey, a couple of my buddies want to come out and play. You guys got 9 more in you. So
amazing.
We're like, of course. And it turns out that the people who are joining are like a globally famous pop music trio of brothers. So you could probably guess who they are.
It's Hanson.
I think Hanson's really good at golf. Yeah, I met the Hanson brothers.
I know they're really sticks.
You know they're sticks. So anyway, so we go and play this front 9 again. So we're going to play like 27. And like one of the brothers is like just a super intense guy, like really cares about his golf and is like just laser focused and is just not saying anything the whole time. I mean, he's friendly, but says hi, but then it's like all business, you know, and he's a pretty good player. It's like single digit handicap. And so Blake is like this big outgoing personality. He's like, he's trying to get in his head, you know, like there's a competitor in him, you know, and I don't think they'd ever met before. And so we play like 2 or 3 holes and every putt, he like Blake's just kind of chirping him and trying to get in his head. And everybody's like watching this tension build and we don't know if he's going to like take a swing at him or if he's going to like break down and laugh. And at one point, you know, we get to this par 3 and the pop star like hits this putt and it's like a perfect putt. And Blake's like something like, you know, there's no way that's going in. And it does like a 360 whip out, like completely out. And he just looks at him from across the green and Blake's like, and then everybody just started dying laughing. He finally broke down and it was like, oh my God. We died because it was just like, God, these athletes, man, they're so competitive
all the time. The curse of Blake Griffin strikes again.
I felt so bad, you know, about that missed putt, but it was, you know, finally he laughed. And that was just like, yeah, I don't know. It was a really funny, random moment of like the camaraderie that only comes. It was like, this is like an eightsome of a bunch of people that have really never met each other before.
Yeah.
And we're like leaving the golf course, arms, you know, arm in arm, hanging out, reliving that moment when everybody broke down and finally, like, you know, cracked a smile. And it was just a great day that only can happen on a golf course.
That's why we play. That is why we play. Chad, you've been very generous with your time. Know you have to bounce. Thanks so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And we look forward to season 2 and getting out to, was it Lakeview, Lakeside?
Lakeside.
Yeah. All right. We're gonna rip it up.
Come on out.
Cool.
Come on out.
Me, you, and Blake.
Thanks
so much. And Connor.
Love it.
Thanks so much, Chad.
Thanks, Appreciate Chad.
It. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Hello friends, Drew here, and it's about that time of the year when a lot of us are thinking about getting out to the golf course. The snow is melting, and we're thinking about we need some new fits to look good on the golf course. Well, let me tell you, the Roan Commuter Collection, with the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, and polos. That four-way stretch provides breathability, flexibility, and it lets you enjoy whatever life throws at you. Hopefully a lot of birdies if you're on the golf course. Head to roan.ggt and use our promo code GGT to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to roan.com/GGT and use code GGT. Upgrade your closet today with Roan.